So you ready to do this? All right, let's roll with the news.
It's time for the most insightful wrestling show today. Wrestling Weekly is on the air.
Are we ready?
I'm very excited.
Please join us in the chat room at WrestlingWeekly.com to submit questions for tonight's guests.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, and you are listening to Doc Young.
He is my friend.
And the inimitable Les Thatcher.
He's a legend. He's one of the greatest of all time.
You're listening to Wrestling Weekly.
The most dominant force in this business today.
And it all starts tonight.
Yeah.
We're the stars of this piece of...
And now, your host for Wrestling Weekly, Doc Young and legendary Les Thatcher.
Welcome, welcome, Doc Young and Les Thatcher here with you at Wrestling Weekly. Am I sounding a little bit low today?
Why is it? Are your voice changing? You're getting older.
Or is this my? Well, you know.
First thing I want to say is I'm hitting that age. My friend Paul Smalls, who was on before us, I'm going to buy him a watch the next time I see him, so he can tell time. That's why we're coming on, 6 minutes late, five minutes late, something like that.
It happens on this network. But we've got a great show for you guys tonight. Of course, we're going to hear the entire 1.5 hour pre-recorded teleconference with Jim Cornette this afternoon, and you've got to hear it to believe it. He shoots on everything. This man just tells it like he feels it, and he's not afraid to say it.
Not just like he feels it, like it basically is. It's not necessarily his opinion. It's the state of the business, basically.
It's really good stuff. So check that out. It's coming up in a little bit. How was your week, Les?
My week was, it was all right. You know, there's so much. I see we're getting possibly two more shows on network, which maybe two more too many. I'm not sure.
Who knows?
Yeah. But we've got a special guest going to be with us for the next half hour. Let's introduce him, Doc.
Let's bring him on from the from PWTorch.com, the Pro Wrestling Torch. Bruce Mitchell is here. We're going to do this hot topic for about a half an hour and just pretty much go over the news that's been going on and talk about some of the topics in wrestling today. Bruce, thank you for being on the program. It's been a while.
Yes, it has, and through no fault of y'all's, but yes, it has, and I'm glad to be back.
Bruce, the first thing I'm going to say is, for those fans who don't know, if you subscribe to the Torch, you get on the VIP list, they send you the reviews and the roundtable from SmackDown, from Raw, from ECW, from the pay-per-views, from the whole nine yards. And the roundtable came in, and my favorite vote was for last night's Raw was Jason Powell's at a .5. And Bruce went for a sixer. Wade Keller went for a five, and I want the two of you drug tested immediately.
You know, I appreciate you putting me over like that. You know, it's important when your guest comes on that you establish their credibility so that people want to hear their opinions. I was sitting there listening to that going, oh, God, he's going to kill me. Because I was like, I like Foley's interview, and I thought that, like, okay, John Cena is actually doing what he should be doing, which is chasing Edge, the world champion. And I guess I had some low expectations besides that. They didn't have any oral sex in front of the kiddies this week. So those three things to me, I appreciated that, particularly that last one. So
there's where our business has come to. The fact that there was no oral sex in front of the children ranks a six on a scale of 1 to 10.
You're doing doo-doo jokes and bare-ass jokes and... You know, I mean, it's completely, and fart jokes and all that stuff. And
you know what it was? To me, talking about if we're going to parallel with any type of sex, it was self-abuse.
It certainly is that.
They only entertained themselves last night. Listen to the crowd. There was barely any reaction from the crowd.
No, that's, that's what goes with that. And then it's just, and then we've got the show tonight with ECW, and, from the passionate crowds that they always had. They never had enough of a crowd, but they always had that thing, and they had it, had it one night stand, the second one night stand. They certainly had it the first one. And now it's just so painful to hear those people. If they're not chanting obscenities, they're not chanting anything.
And yeah.
It's just, to see Paul Heyman walk out there, who's a pretty darn good promo man, and you just see people roll their eyes and not listen to a word he says after Foley and Flair, it's rough. It's a rough deal.
You know, the whole thing, I just, so much of it, I mean, first of all, The Miz is the top. He and if they team, he and Johnny Fairplay up, I'll buy a ticket for that.
I will tell you this, Les. You know Johnny Fairplay is a friend of mine.
I know, and he actually,
I swear to God, I mean, he's actually shown up here lately. I mean, he's back in the area, which is really scary for me. But he even is just like, why is The Miz a babyface? What's wrong? I mean, that guy is so obnoxious. Like, he's more... You know, they're friends of mine that won't hang out with him. And I'm like, you know, won't come to my house if I have him at the poker party. And what I'm thinking is, having had Johnny Fairplay at my house, there are people that will hang out with Johnny, but The Miz is so bad, they won't hang out with him. I mean, what the hell is that? I mean, how bad is this guy? I mean, it's just, Johnny's my friend, and I really do like Johnny, but it's like, oh, my God. You know, you're just like, oh, I mean, it's just... You know, you're just exhausted after Johnny
Fairplay tells you that you're too obnoxious, something's really wrong.
It's like, and, you know, people can see it. And, boy, I mean, and I, you know, I didn't write about that part, but I did enjoy watching that guy go out there and just choke like a big dog. I mean, that was beautiful, that Divas search.
I knew both of you were laughing. Actually, I thought about both of you when that happened.
And the girls were as embarrassing as they are every year.
Who wrote that?
One girl, the Miami Heat girl.
Yeah,
I'm scared of her. The Miami Heat girl with the big fro and all that. I'm scared of her. And then the one I thought was like, okay, I'd forgotten when they talked before, because as soon as they're like off the air, I completely forget about them.
Right.
You know what they said before. And so the blonde chick, I thought, wow, she's really good looking. And then she opened her mouth and she couldn't speak. You know, she was speaking phonetic English or whatever it was. I was like, oh, this is just beautiful. Oh, man, what is this?
I know. It was bad. Oh. And, you know, now, Bruce, you'll appreciate this. Doc?
Yes.
Well, not that you're an old man, Bruce, but you go back to the territory days, you watch wrestling the way it should be. Absolutely. And when I say that, I don't mean it shouldn't be upgraded to fit today, but storylines, psychology, and everything should still be. Now, starting last week, or well, actually 2 weeks ago, but vocally starting last week, Randy Orton basically might as well come out with a sign saying, listen, Hulk Hogan and I are going to work a program, I'm going to hit on his daughter, and it's going to end up with he and I in a match. So you won't have to tune in. Now, we won't, so you, in case you're not going to watch, we're going to tell you what we're going to do beforehand. I mean,
there's very much something to that.
They might as well just tell him the damn angle instead of, you know. Now, to me, from the old school, I would rather have gone into Saturday night with Orton making no overtures towards Brooke, no mention of Hogan, unless it's just because of the match, or if he is going to work with him. But the point is, then the surprise, somebody's going to say, well, you know, somebody will miss it. They want people to watch. I want him to miss it. I want Bruce to call me on Sunday morning and say, Les, you should have watched last night. Here's what happened. Because that's what hooks the goddamn people, I think. Excuse my French, but I can't help myself.
Yeah, you don't get a lot of that anymore at all.
No.
I mean, there very much is something to that, in that the people are going to tune in. They're not going to tune in because Randy Orton's going to hit on Brooke Hogan, and they've already been told that. They're going to tune in, okay, Hulk Hogan's on Saturday night main event. Then when you've got that audience there, that hope, you know, the audience you hope you have, then you're right. You do. Then you can start the shock, and then you can slowly move into it. But then on the other hand, they've got Saturday night's main event, and they've got till SummerSlam to do it, and then basically they got till SummerSlam to end it too. That angle's creepy anyway. But
yeah, and when you hear that the record company doesn't want her to be involved, and you know, as hokey and sophomoric as things are currently, I can appreciate that because I think it'll be detracting within the industry where she's trying to make her mark.
Well, when you're, as you said, I'm of a certain age, and I'm not looking for the next hot teenage, pop star. I mean, you know, when they had it when I was that age, and every generation gets there. You know, every few years you get your new one, you know, for the generation that is. And the last thing I would think that teenagers that are looking for the next Britney Spears are looking for is a guy that belonged to a generation hovering, you know, a corny guy hovering over the hot girl. They want the girl, you know, they want the girl free and clear. I mean, you know, I think Hogan helps his daughter in that he's, you know, that he pushes her like crazy and, you know, knows a lot about being famous and knows a lot about marketing and you know, and real canny about handling his career. But on the other hand, I think he sucks up a lot of her oxygen. I just think it's, you know, it's one thing if you're, you know, it's one thing if you're trying to be, I mean, I don't know, trying to be in wrestling or something, but I think trying to be the next girl singer craze, I mean, and then there's this guy from the 80s who their fathers used to watch. It doesn't, you know, they don't want things that their parents watch. They want their own.
Mm-hmm. Sure, absolutely. Every generation wants their mark to make their mark. But, you know, the other thing, too, is one of the things when I do my seminars and training camps is one of the things I try to stress to the kids, yes, the majority of fans that are constantly watching, that are buying tickets, especially the independent shows, are smart to the business. They understand the workings of the business. So all you have in your favor is the element of surprise. And they have just taken that away from that particular storyline totally. And now all you have to wait for is not, are they going to fight? Is he going to hit on her? The answer to both is yes. It's just a matter of when.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. To me, if they go, I mean, and both of them are kind of creepy, but if they go with she goes off with Randy and Hogan's mad, which is right out of the WWE playbook, you know, that's about, if they do that, that's about the only suspense, and there's not a ton of suspense in that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, I don't know. It's
just, let me ask you this. Is there any suspense as to who will win the match?
No. And you know what? I may shock you with this, and I understand the young stud that's going to be on your television every week, and he's going to be headlining pay-per-views for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
He really should go over the older guy whose time in the ring is, you know, very limited to, you know, a few more main event matches.
Right, absolutely.
But you know what? I'm about to switch it. I think Hogan, if you're going to bring him in, if you're going to use him, he is the only good in that is doing that pattern match and giving people their nostalgic legend, and he should win every match.
Yeah, but why put him against Orton, somebody that, you know, like you said, they're going to count on him in the future to be a main eventer and to lead the company. Why use him? Why not use somebody else?
You know, I agree with that. I agree with that to a certain extent. But if he's going to have a match and if they're going to use him, I mean, I'm sure what the idea is that Randy's still got years to go, and losing this one to this legend isn't going to hurt him as much as being in the ring with the so-called Babe Ruth of pro wrestling and doing a program with him where people see it is going to help him. I'm sure that's what they're thinking. I'm not real sure about that, but I don't think it's like Michael Jordan with Chicago Bulls. He was the legend. He won and all that. Then the legend comes back with the Washington Wizards, and he loses, and that's just a downer. It's like if you're going to use that kind of legend in your business, either don't use him, and I think there's a real argument for that. But if you're going to use him, he should go. You know, he should go over, and he should do his pattern that everybody knows and has in their DNA to this point. You know, Hulk up, hit the leg drop, clap, clap, clap. Everybody has a nostalgic tear in their eye, except for some of us who never bought into it, and then go away and let people forget for a while, you know, so they don't notice how slow he's moving and all that kind of thing.
I know we have to move on to other subjects because I know we're limited on time tonight, but that show was so bad on so many different levels. The McMahons beating up a mentally challenged guy, double-teaming him, which I just sat there and I said, I can't even believe this is going on. You know,
I really do hate that. I mean, I you know, and I've gotten to the point where I don't get on Eugene very much because it's there. And, you know, I know the excuse is he got to pin Mr. McMahon in the end, so he actually got put over in some way. But and I don't buy that. But
I don't either.
I just don't. I don't know. I grew up with across the street from a family that had a mentally challenged son that was about my age, and I saw how they took care of him and protected him. And what they did with him, so it just really to exploit that. I personally have a hard time with it.
Yeah, I do too.
Now I agree with you on that. I have a mentally challenged person living next door to me, so I mean, I've been through that. But what you said earlier about Eugene going over, you know, by getting the pin and stuff like that. Well, that was all overshadowed by DX.
Yeah.
Well, that whole thing too. It's like. My question is, why was Vince invited him? Then they show up, and he shows shock that they're there. I'm thinking, Vince, that the station's been advertised for
exactly.
a week that you've invited him back.
And then shut up for an hour and a half before they came
yeah.
out.
And about what about Vizera and Charlie and Lillian? Please explain that to me.
Wow.
The only way I can explain that one to you is there was heat on Lillian for when she fell off the ring and hurt herself for yelling and screaming. Apparently she's a pro wrestler who should take her bumps in stride, and she acted up too much for the taste of them, you know, in the back. She wasn't tough enough for it, even though I don't know why she should be. And so now she has to be punished by taking a flat back bump in the ring, and both those guys, both those guys turning their back on her, which I don't know. You know, the one, and I was watching it, and I swear I thought they were going to go off hand in hand. The only thing that made sense to me at all. I mean, it was like, why were they doing, these guys are fighting all of a sudden. It was like, are they a couple? Is that what
you're
saying?
I was just going to say, that takes it to the next level, Bruce.
It's the next logical thing. I mean, I thought it was the next logical thing, but I didn't want to ride it because I was afraid someone might pass on the idea. And now I've said it, so, you know.
Here's my thoughts about the whole thing. A few weeks before, we saw, you know, fake Kane beat Kane in a squash match, basically, on pay-per-view. The next day, fake Kane all of a sudden has no strength. He gets thrown out, and it was basically to blow off the angle. I think that they were seeing that Vizera and Charlie Haas were not working out. They were not getting the reaction they wanted, and they wanted to blow off the angle like that and maybe even team them up. And this is a way to do that.
But nobody cared.
Well,
exactly.
That's there's that. You know, one thing I did love about the fake Kane angle is nobody seemed to notice that fake Kane was smaller than real Kane. And if fake Kane is supposed to scare real Kane, if he's supposed to be a monster that scares the monster, wouldn't you want a guy that was at least a little bit bigger than the original monster?
See, there you go with logic again.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just like, you know, he steps over the ropes, and he's not tall enough to step over the ropes the way real Kane does.
Mm-hmm.
It's like... Yeah, I mean, you know, it just seems like the first thing you would look for is like, okay, and they're usually pretty good about it. I got to have a big guy. So, I mean, that was, I actually, as stupid as it seemed in those 2 days, I was like, that whole angle stunk, get out of it. And at least they let him, you know, at least the story ended. I mean, it ended real fast, but at least they beat him up and get him the hell out of there. And
right.
That was okay with me.
So we took last week off, myself and Lesh, for the holiday to see some fireworks, of course. So we were not around for the whole RVD Sabu thing. So I want to get your take on this, on what's going on with RVD and Sabu and the punishment that they
received.
Go ahead,
Bruce. You start.
Well, you know, WWE, because of the death of Eddie Guerrero, you know, has instituted a wellness policy, and this is the first time that something has really happened out in public. You know, Rob Van Dam and Sabu got arrested for, smoking marijuana in their car and had less than an ounce of pot and some, you know, and some pills that they didn't have a prescription bottle for, but apparently they've got, you know, they just didn't have the bottle, didn't have the prescription, but apparently they were prescribed medications. And so, you know, WWE had to act publicly with this, and you add that to both of these guys were part of, you know, the revived ECW that's really struggling. And Rob Van Dam was supposed to be the centerpiece, and the other centerpiece has already been sent home because he's got his own physical problems to deal with, Kurt Angle.
Right.
And he's breaking down, and he's got so much pride and so much drive, he'll never do it himself, so they had to make him. And then there's some drug questions there, too. So, you know, they had to do something, so that meant that – but they couldn't afford to have both these stars off of these house shows that are bombing already. So you would think logically that Rob Van Dam, since it was his drugs and he was driving the car, would get the bigger punishment than Sabu. But you'd also think logically that Rob Van Dam is the champion, the WWE champion and the ECW champion and the bigger star and the flagship of it. So he wouldn't get suspended and Sabu would. But then it turned out that Sabu went in and was contrite and apologized to everybody and apologized to McMahon and
yeah.
And Rob Van Dam was not contrite and didn't apologize, except for McMahon behind the scenes.
Okay.
And so they decided to, you know, they decided to publicly they had to suspend somebody. So Rob Van Dam gets a suspension for a
gentlemen,
moment.
Gentlemen, I hate to interrupt you here, but
I'm talking as fast as I can. I'm sorry.
I know. We're getting a tornado warning for our neighborhood.
Okay, Les. We'll go ahead. Myself and Bruce will finish up here.
Okay.
And you head down to the shelter.
We're being told here in the Milford area to take cover, so immediately.
Okay. We'll talk to you again soon. We'll see you next week, Les.
All right, Bruce.
Stay safe.
All right. Cut. This is short of pleasure. Talk to you later.
All right, Les.
Bye-bye.
that's the first time we've had to lose a host because of a tornado warning. But
that's a pretty exciting shot.
That's the second time during the season since we've been on on the air here that this has happened to poor Les. He lives in the wrong part of Ohio.
Well, I mean we have some there's been some volatile storms this season, but I can't say we had anything like that. But wow, I mean, you know. Anything can happen, and probably will here in the World Wrestling Federation.
Oh yeah, yeah, and in the whole business of wrestling, of course itself. Yeah, but I agree with you, of course. Going back to Sabu and Rob Van Dam, but Sabu was also caught with some prescription pills that were not prescribed to him too. Is that
well,
correct?
From what I understand, they were prescribed to. I mean, the official word is, I'll say it like that, they were prescribed to him, but he didn't have. Neither one of them had their prescriptions with them, so I mean they have to provide the authorities with a prescription or face a worse charge. So
right.
You think that'd be a matter of paperwork. But,
yeah, you just have to go prove it later.
Right. So I mean there is that. So just kind of it was another taking Rob Van Dam off of television and for a month, and they had to get the title off of him and get it to Edge, which I think they were going to do anyway. In fact, I know they were going to do anyway. But then they had to do something with Van Dam, with Van Dam holding the ECW title, and they were stuck for something. They really had one star left, and it was the one that people don't like being over there. One of the ones people don't like being over there, and that's Big Show.
Right. Do you think it's hypocritical for the WWE to bring Rob Van Dam as part of his image, with the 420 jokes and I'm on a roll type things, and then to go ahead and suspend him for actually doing that?
The hypocrisy, there's so many small and big hypocrisies in WWE and in all of pro wrestling, but yeah, that's definitely one of them. And I think, part of the deal here was that they basically, they can test for marijuana, but they don't really, because they know as a practicality, that's one of the safer things that the wrestlers can do on the road to alleviate pain and to relax and get to sleep. But part of the, and it's an unspoken, unwritten deal, is don't get caught,
right?
Don't embarrass the company.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you're going to do if you're going to do something and break the law, then part of the it's always part of it that don't get your ass caught. And they did, and it really embarrassed the company. And, there's a lot of guys, ECW is, not exactly stable right now as it starts off. And, a lot of those guys have jobs because there is an ECW, and, this certainly didn't help. So, perception is a big part of it too. But yeah, I think all that will come out of that is, I think it'll be a long time before we hear any more, Rob Van Dam, like you said, little cute little references. And I think every time he goes out to wrestle, when he comes back for about 6 months after suspension, you're going to hear marijuana.
Oh yeah,
like they did Tuesday night in Philadelphia.
Absolutely, Bruce. We got to get going. We got Jim Cornette, the entire teleconference from this afternoon. It was at Spike TV, TNA. Jim Cornette.
Well, I just hope that for once that he said what he thought.
Yeah, and it's really good, guys. Stick around for it. He talks all about WWE, his problems with them, Paul Heyman, all kinds of things. It's a pretty good interview. Stick around for that. Bruce, I want to thank you for being on with us tonight. Don't forget to check out Bruce Mitchell's columns over at pwtorch.com. And, Bruce, we'll see you again in a few weeks when you come back for Hot Topic.
And hopefully we'll be talking to Les Thatcher then.
Yes. You will. He will be safe.
He'll be out of the basement.
He'll be out of the basement by then. All right, Bruce, thank you very much for sticking around with us. Guys, we're going to take a small break. We'll be back right after this with the entire Jim Cornette interview from this afternoon at the Spike TV TNA conference. Check it out, guys. We'll see you next week. Enjoy ECW tonight. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, like I said, Jim Cornette here on Wrestling Weekly. Stick around.
It's like a pulse. chances to die. After 4 years, the chants are as loud as ever. These three letters changed history.
This ain't WCW.
Revolutionized sports entertainment.
This ain't Monday Night Raw.
And brought the wrestling world to its knees.
Oh my God!
Tonight, the revolution is reborn. Welcome to the underground. Welcome to the cutting edge. Welcome to the extreme.
This, my friend, is ECW.
Ross, why don't you take it?
You got it. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Just want to welcome everybody and thank you for participating in the TNA conference call as we head into Victory Road this Sunday, live on pay-per-view. Before we get going with Jim Cornette, just a quick rundown on the Nielsen numbers from this past Thursday. Spike TV, Impact, airing from 11 p.m. to midnight Eastern time, did a 1.0 household Nielsen rating with a 1.0 in the male 18 to 49 demographics and a 1.12 in the male 18 to 34 demographics and an average audience of 1.1 million viewers. That said, we head to Victory Road this Sunday, again, on pay-per-view. Number one contenders match, top of the bill. Of course, you got the tag team match, and hair versus hair. Raven versus Larry Zbyszko, others as well. But first, let's bring in the new face of TNA Wrestling, Mr. Jim Cornette.
Boy, I tell you what, if I'm the new face, I'd hate to see the old one. Hello, everybody. And by the way, wasn't that groovy hold music they had on for the conference call? I felt like I was at a high school graduation or a funeral.
Quite a few questions, sir. Our first question comes from Blackjack Brown from the Chicago Sun-Times. Your line is open, sir.
Oh, we're not alone.
Blackjack, hey, I wonder if everybody else can hear us, or if we're just hanging out by ourselves here.
I think everybody can hear us. It's just that one person at a time.
Ah, well, see, I like group. I like group calls. But anyway, Blackjack, how's things going in Chicago, man?
Everything's going fine in Chicago, New York, and Las Vegas. And how are you doing?
I am excellent. It's been a long time since I've seen you. What, about 3 whole months?
No, yeah, something like that in Chicago. And things are going good there.
Excellent.
Okay, so we'll leave our personal business behind for the moment. But there were some things. What do you think of the wrestling scene? I mean, we've been in this like 30-some-odd years now. I don't know if you're counting, but I think that's what it is.
Well, speak for yourself. I'm not that old. But.
Yeah, well, you're getting up there, brother. I mean, there's no comparison to the way it was. I mean, for what they're trying to do, I guess things are different. I mean, there's been different writers, and I think there's been some writers that would almost make us go insane for the things that they've written. And
well, you know, hopefully everybody can hear this where I don't have to chew my food twice the course of the call, but it's no secret. You know, I love wrestling. I've been a wrestling fan since I was 9 years old. Professionally, I've been in the business 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it really hurt me so bad to see what's gone on with wrestling that last summer I was, in effect, just going to go home and say heck with it.
Right.
You know, but the WWE, honestly, is what a lot of people, because they have the tenure and the seniority, view as professional wrestling in this country these days. And it's a toss-up whether they're going to insult your intelligence or your religion, or your sexual preference. And I'm not even a religious person necessarily, but I do have intelligence and a sexual preference,
right.
And I hate for them to be insulted.
Exactly.
It's become a joke and a farce and almost a vanity promotion where the son-in-law and the kids and anybody who happens to want to kiss the proper butt cheek,
right.
Gets to do whatever they want to do, but the new talent is being held down, and that's what got me re-energized, you know, with TNA. I did some things for Ring of Honor. I did some things for the Wrestling Fan Fest with the Midnight Express reunions. Mm-hmm. But when I got down to the TNA tapings of the pay-per-view in June, basically, you know, I got the old feel again. Guys who want to present wrestling, who are not ashamed of the word, who are not ashamed to be involved in the professional wrestling business. And for the past year, when people would recognize me in public, I would tell them I was retired, that I didn't have anything to do with wrestling anymore, because I was ashamed to be involved with what they perceive to be professional wrestling these days. And so TNA, I really had a good time. I thought we got some good work accomplished. I think there's plenty of young talent. There's going to be some breakthrough stars. There's some guys that have been on top for a long time that still can go, like Sting. I was just amazed at the condition that he's kept himself in. And, you know, so I was just pleased with the whole experience. And I think that if more people can get the word that there is still professional wrestling on television out there, that they're not ashamed to watch or that they haven't been run off away from, I think TNA is only going to gain in popularity just because of the fact that it's an alternative to the dog and pony show that's being presented across the country these days.
Yeah, there's just been so much bad stuff out there that you wouldn't want your kids to watch or even us to watch at the time we were watching.
Heck with the kids, I don't want to watch it.
As I was saying, I mean, thank God to the wrestling correspondents that fall behind you and me at a time to where I got to get that most of that information from people like King Jordan and stuff like that. Thank God for him and Wild Bill that, you know, I can't even watch it like I used to.
Well,
but TNA,
I think that
I've been watching it a little bit more. There's more wrestling involved, and it's been pretty good.
Well, every dog has his day, and I think ours is around the corner, and other dogs are headed toward the pound.
Yeah. Well, we know what to do with that. All right, Jim, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Blackjack. Good talking to you.
All right.
Our next question, sir, comes from Brian Stoll from WGNU Radio St. Louis. Your line is open.
Thank you. Jim, how you doing today?
Brian, how you doing? How's the Stranglehold?
Stranglehold is doing excellent, and everybody here in St. Louis is looking forward to a victory road come Sunday.
Man, I tell you, you know, St. Louis, I had a lot of good times at the old Checker Dome, the old arena. I don't even know if it stands these days or what they're calling it. And, of course, the Keel. The highlight of my young career, 1985, the first time I got a chance to wrestle in the Keel Auditorium, I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. I could just see the ghosts of Wild Bill Longs and hanging from the rafters, you know.
Right, right. Well, unfortunately, the Checker Dome is down, but Keel Center is still there now called the Savas Center. So,
yeah, I've been there, too. It doesn't have the charm of the old place. None of the mildew, but none of the charm.
Hey, I did want to take you back a little bit, and since you're bringing in St. Louis to the conversation. You managed, I think it was down in New Orleans, Ron Powers and Cowboy Bob Orton. Bob's since retired, but Ron still puts the boots on from time to time. Any chance that you might be bringing some security down or some wrestlers of your own to TNA?
Well, you know, I want to take a look at the landscape, first of all, because I had a lot to chew on my first appearance in TNA, and there was a lot going on. If the folks have watched Impact on Spike over the past couple of weeks, they'll know that I wasn't exactly sitting around with twiddling my thumbs. I think there's a lot of talent trying to get into TNA. You know, that's one thing, and I've talked to several wrestlers today on the phone that are looking for a place to go, that are looking, as Samoa Joe has said on Impact, they don't want to go to a company where they're told what to say and what to do and who to be. They want to go to a company where they can show their talent, they can show their ability, and let the fans be the one to decide whether they're stars or not. And that's what TNA, that the opportunity that they're offering. And there's a lot of guys that want to come to TNA. And, of course, you know, you can't book everybody, and there can't be 200 wrestlers on the roster. But at the same time, with the talent already in TNA and the folks that are making overtures about coming and the acquisitions that are in progress, yeah, I think it's going to be real exciting. And it just, the cream always rises to the top. Unfortunately, sometimes so does the scum.
Samoa Joe, Homicide, AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, some of the newer stars of TNA, but you also have experience working with them in other promotions. How big a factor was that in making the decision to come into TNA?
Well, you know, it wasn't hard. The only decision I had to make in coming to TNA, it was not that I didn't approve of the product or not that I didn't like the people involved or not that I didn't think the talent was great. It was just the level of involvement that I wanted to have in professional wrestling at this point in time. But as I started watching TNA on television and started talking to everybody, I realized that, you know, this was something that I really wanted to be involved with. And I'm not as young as I used to be, and I'm not out there full-time waving a tennis racket around, but I've had experience in management. I've had experience in television, and I hope to be able to lend some of that to TNA, and as well maybe persuade some more of these wrestlers that you're talking about that aren't in TNA to come that direction because of the influence I've had on their careers in the past. You know, I was the first guy to book Chris Candido in a major territory. I was the first guy to book Glenn Jacobs Kane in a regular territory. I was the first guy to to put Al Snow on television after his 13-year career. He was a 13-year overnight success. You know, we had a lot of in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and here at OVW, we trained a lot of top talent that unfortunately the other guys didn't know how to use or didn't care to use. So I think that if I can lend anything that I've done in the past 25 years in wrestling, any of the credibility that I've built up to be able to help TNA, I'm more than happy to do it.
Could you expand a little bit on what your role will be with TNA, besides being the face of management on television? You've got the background. I mean, you kind of were a one-man show in a lot of areas and in charge. Are you going to have some creative responsibilities? Are you assimilating into the committee? Or how?
Well, you know, I'm... I guess if they wrote a report on me in grade school, it would be doesn't play well with others. I tend to have my own opinions about things, and fortunately they've been successful more than they've been unsuccessful, and I'm not very diplomatic. I don't do committees well, but that's one of the reasons why TNA contacted me, because they want somebody that can go out there and lay the law down to the wrestlers and or tell the fans what's going to be going on and why that it's in their best interest. So basically I'm going to be the liaison between TNA management and the fans and the wrestlers. If there's an announcement that needs to be made or a ruling that needs to be made, obviously the TNA management has final say, but I definitely give my recommendations. I'm going to obviously be in there talking about who I think is talent, who I think is money, and who I don't. And basically what I said on television is in great part what my role behind the scenes is going to be. I want people who can draw ratings, who can sell pay-per-views, and who can have great matches. And I will do everything in my power to see that those people with those three talents are featured.
I don't want to take too much longer, but I did want you to reminisce a little bit. Obviously, the big hair versus hair match this Sunday, Raven and Larry Zbysko. You've been part of that before, having your head shaved in 1984. What can you remember and share about that?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. It was in New Orleans. It was summertime. It was hotter than three shades of hell, and I was sweating, and I had a pretty good head of hair back then in those days. And I learned one thing about a hair match, have a good set of clippers, because the clippers wouldn't work. They broke the scissors and finally started shaving my head with a disposable Bic razor. So I promise you on Sunday at Victory Road, there's going to be a good set of barber shears there, because somebody is getting peeled like an egg, and we're just going to make sure the hair falls properly without, hopefully, you know, anybody's scalp being taken off in the process.
Well, that'll be good, because I think Raven had the cow shears last time.
Yeah, it didn't look too barbery to me. It looked kind of barbaric the last time. So, you know, I'm not wanting to get anybody murdered or anything, but somebody's hair is going to fall on Sunday.
Jim, appreciate the time. Continued success. It's great to see you in TNA, and we'll be tuning in Sunday.
Brian, thanks a lot.
You got it.
Our next question comes from James Lowe of KNET Radio. Your line is open, sir.
Jimmy Cornette, I'll tell you, it's a... amazing thing to get to finally talk to you.
James, do you indeed represent the Jiggy Jaguar show?
Yes, indeed.
Who is Jiggy Jaguar?
I'm actually the Jiggy Jaguar.
You are the Jiggy Jaguar. Well, let's get jiggy with it.
Well, I'll tell you, I got two big questions for you. One being, I can't believe this, but Spike TV, you know, owned by MTV and Viacom and the great corporate giant that is that, there's been rumors about Wrestling Society X. Is TNA going to do any cross promotion or anything with them, or is it totally two different things?
Well, first of all, it is totally two different things. I do not, and I'm not going to pretend to know very much at all about the Wrestling Society X project, otherwise than I've heard of its name.
Yeah.
But I can tell you that TNA is a separate entity, and I think before there's any. This is just off the top of my head now, not speaking for anybody but myself. I think before there's any cross-promotion going on with other promotions per se, the TNA is probably going to want to cement its audience on Spike Television and going to want to cement its pay-per-view audience. And I think also from what I've heard of the Wrestling Society X project, it's a different style. But I don't know much more than that. So, unfortunately, I can baffle my way through a little bit, but I can't help you out with too many details.
Okay, and one more question. And I cannot believe that this has even got any traction, but what the hell was going through your mind when you went to I guess it was a wrestling show. You were sitting up there with Terry Funk and Beautiful Bobby, and that guy question... It's still real to me, damn it.
Well, no, I tell you, the thing is, it was in Spartanburg last November at the Stargate Tribute Show. It was the scene of some of our greatest triumphs down here in South Carolina. And the gentleman who did that, who got pretty well overcome with emotion, is a great wrestling fan named David Wills, who I believe he's from Georgia. I want to say that. And he kind of pretty well got overcome with emotion just at seeing some of his heroes there. He's a really intelligent guy. He's a really great guy to talk to. And it got a lot of play, but I understand once that, like the Jimmy Kimmel Show and the network talk shows of the world found out that he was really an intelligent person who had all of his teeth, they got disinterested in talking to him further. It was a moment in time, but I tell you, Dennis Condrey was... he was looking for the exit door and reaching in his pocket, not knowing what he was going to have to do.
Well, I'll tell you, I know everybody on the internet has thought it was like going to be the William Hung of professional wrestling, and it didn't turn out that way.
Well, no, but David, he's a great guy, and we really had a hoot talking about it afterwards, and also, you know, he's been a longtime fan, and I can't say a bad thing about him because I'm the same way. I've been a longtime wrestling fan, and don't know whether I'd cry over it, but I've seen some things over the past few years in wrestling that made me want to cry.
ECW for one.
Well, you know that some people have said that the only reason WWE started ECW was because they wanted to take the small buildings and run them and try to hamper TNA's progress. And I tell you what, if they want to run small arenas, they picked the perfect promotion to start. I can't think of a better promotion to run small arenas than ECW.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a shame that Vince has taken that over and kind of screwed with it, because I would have loved to see Paul Heyman have ECW and go up against the great minds that are running TNA. I think it would be great wrestling.
But you know, once again, you can't polish a turd. And
there is that.
I think they're finding that out right about now.
Well, Jimmy, it's been a good chance talking to you. I'd love to get you on the show sometime.
Well, you got it, man. I'd be happy. Right. You know, as much as I can do, I will be happy to spread the word, especially for the Jiggy Jaguar show. What can I say?
There you go. Well, I'll let somebody step in here, and you have a good one, Jim.
Thanks, James.
Thanks.
Our next one comes from Jim Barcelone from the Miami Herald. Your line is open, sir.
Jim,
how are you?
Good, thank you. What is it like here with the company TNA that you're with now? And can you compare it a little bit to OVW, some of the things you were able to do with OVW and things that you are going to be doing with TNA?
Well, you know, OVW and TNA are very different entities in that Ohio Valley Wrestling, briefly, I'll try to be brief, was started here in Louisville, Kentucky in 1993 by my partner, Danny Davis, when he decided to retire from wrestling and move back home. You know, he had some family here. And then I had run into Danny because I managed him early in my career when I was visiting home and saw his operation. He had a great wrestling training school. And then as students graduated, he started running small live events and then got a television program. So when I was in Stamford and wanting to move out of the Northeast and back down south, where's the sick man wants penicillin, I suggested that the WWE had no formal training program, developmental program, where guys could go to wrestle in front of crowds, to get television experience and have a training facility as well. So along with Jim Ross, we set that up between the WWE and OVW, and I bought into the promotion here. And everything was successful as long as Jim Ross was in office. However, as soon as he stepped down as head of talent relations, that's where the problems began, because despite the fact that we had been not only the most successful, but really, for all intents and purposes, the only successful developmental program, except for the time that they did business with Les Thatcher in Cincinnati, they wanted to take over our company and tell us everything to do, and basically because we had a contract with them and they were the 800-pound gorilla, you know, we had to acquiesce to a lot of it, and suddenly I realized that even though we had done great things like sold out the Louisville Gardens, become the highest-rated local program on our television station here on Saturdays, become the largest drawing ongoing entertainment event at Six Flags Kentucky Kingdom here in Louisville, produced WWE champions like Brock Lesnar and John Cena and Batista, etc., that wasn't good enough. They wanted to tell us how to run our company. And so all of a sudden we got down to deciding what brand of Snapple to sell at the concession stand. That's where the problems began with myself and the WWE, because with what they've done with talent over the past couple of years, thanks to the inept writing of the Junior McMahon and the total irresponsibility of the talent relations chief who used to ride a skateboard, they're running their company to the ground, which that was okay with me as long as they didn't do it to mine. But when they started running wrestling in Louisville into the ground, that's when I had problems because my face was on it. Everybody in this town knows I was involved with it. I was the announcer. I was the booker, etc. So we had problems. But OVW was always set up as a training facility and a small local promotion to give people the opportunity to learn their craft and to advance. TNA is a major national promotion, international promotion, on pay-per-view and on national cable television, and paying a lot of money to some big stars and to compete with the WWE. So they're two different entities. But in the past 25 years, I've worked for every major company, WCW, WWE, TNA, ROH, MOUSE. I've been involved in a little bit of everything. And when you come down to it, wrestling is wrestling. You get athletes with conflicts, challenging for championships, with entertaining personalities, put it on television, and sell tickets to people who want to see what happens. They don't want bad comedy. They don't want bad taste, I think, for the most part. They don't want special effects or cars being blown up or you know, penis enlargers being delivered. They want to see professional wrestling and the colorful and entertaining personalities that populate that world in conflict. It's very simple formula, very hard to actually pull off very easy in theory, but difficult in practice. But when it comes down to it, it's all wrestling. I want to see these guys fight and who's going to win.
And the other area I was going to ask you about with OVW, there was talk of an incident that happened with you and someone backstage, and the incident with you, I believe, striking somebody that they didn't do. And I was curious to get your take on that whole situation because I've read so much about the other side. I never read anything of your take.
I'd love to tell you this. I'd love to tell you this. And as a matter of fact, I'm glad that there's 30 people listening so I don't have to tell this story twice. We had a moron in our wrestling school who had been there about 2 or 3 weeks who was sitting in an area that was reserved for our wrestling school students. And the boogeyman, who you may have seen on television, was in the process of scaring the bejesus out of everybody in sight. And he had cleared the ring out, and people were running and screaming in fear, and, I mean, they were throwing babies in the air, and, my God, it was a scene of mass panic. And this one guy thought he was tough and decided that he was not going to let the boogeyman pass. He was not going to get up. He was not going to run. He was going to laugh in the boogeyman's face and dare him to do something about it. I took exception to that because it was on television. So when calling this moron into the locker room to ask him why he didn't run from the boogeyman, he proceeded to tell me that nobody told him anything about it and he didn't know why that there was a big deal. I responded by telling him that I didn't tell him that I was going to slap the piss out of him, and then I slapped the piss out of him. And I told him that if he thinks that he can whip somebody, then he ought to go out and fight me because he's got a real good chance of whipping me. But the big, angry boogeyman that was standing 1 foot behind me, breathing down my neck, was probably going to break him in half. So if he thought he was so tough and he wanted to fight everybody, he could fight me, but he didn't. And therein lay the tale. And that was the excuse that the WWE and John Laurinaitis, the head of talent relations, who's a liar and actually has no honor whatsoever and has never drawn a dime in this business, that was the excuse that they used to release me from my consultant's contract with WWE because they'd been looking for a reason because I wouldn't swallow their crap. So they also then didn't figure out that they couldn't fire me from my own company. So I then agreed, being the nice guy that I am, to step aside because I refused to do business for the rest of my life with anybody connected with the WWE, so they could still do business with OVW, of which I am part owner of, and I wouldn't have anything to do with them, and they could do whatever the heck they wanted to it as long as they didn't run it into the ground. And that's the agreement that we've been working under ever since.
Well, Jim, I thank you for your time. Thank you for that answer, because I really do think a lot of times when things like that happen, we don't get to read, hear, or get both sides of the story.
Well, I'm sorry
I don't sugarcoat everything. But,
well, I don't know whose fault it is or not fault, but the thing is I always feel it's important to get both sides.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next one comes from Alex Marvez with the Script Howard News. Your line is open, sir.
Alex Marvez, how are you?
Jim, how are you?
I am great. I am just loving things here in Louisville, Kentucky.
Great. As long as you're not sending me black roses and congratulating me on the death of my wrestling promotion, I'm fine.
Well, Mr. Hurd, how are you?
Jim Hurd, yes, indeed. Hey, you know, it's interesting. Obviously, we go back a long way, but there's a whole generation of fans out there who don't know who you are, to be quite honest with you, or have only seen you on tape or...
And, you know, I'm trying to keep it that way.
Is that a little bit of a challenge for you now, becoming a TV character again, is trying to win over a new brand of fans and trying to basically recreate yourself as a new character?
Well, you know, not really, because I do what I do regardless of what situation it's in, and I let people decide whether they want to watch me or not. And I don't, you know, that's one thing. I've been involved in wrestling for so long, and I got to the point there where I was consumed with it. And it was going to run me crazy, especially, like I said, dealing with the WWE, because they will run anybody crazy. That's one of the reasons why I'm with TNA now, because I respect everybody involved in the company, and I've known many of them for 25 years. But as far as what I do what I do in the situation that I'm in. And I don't expect to become The Rock or Stone Cold Steve Austin. I'm, at this stage of my career, not looking to be a superstar. I'm not looking to be a person who sells tickets, per se, or sells pay-per-views. That's why I've got this position as the face of TNA management, because I want to facilitate the young talent, the guys who are still hungry, the guys who want to perform and want to make names. I want to make it easier for them. If I can lend some of my credibility to bring them up a little bit, or to make some announcements that I think are better for the fans and you know, plug for the guys to get some better matches to elevate themselves. That's my position now. I'm sort of the grease. I'm not the wheel.
So obviously managing is something that has sort of gone by the wayside. How much do you miss it, and do you think there is a place for managers in today's wrestling?
Well, I miss it a lot, but only because of the guys that I managed. You know, when I was with the Midnight Express every night for 8 years, you know, I mean, how could you ask for a better job than that? I'm in wrestling. I've always wanted to do it. I'm a manager. I'm working for major promoters like Bill Watts and Jim Crockett, et cetera, and I got the greatest tag team in the world where we can go out every night and tear the house down. So, I mean, mm-hmm. That was a dream job. But and also I've managed a few people. You're probably the only person on this conference call that remembers Mantar or the new Midnight Express that they foisted off on me up there. You know, that then it's not so good. And I think there would be a great place for managers in the business these days. One company, you have to have big fake tatas and look good in a bikini to be a manager. But, for example, James Mitchell in TNA right now, you know, there's still a place for managers in wrestling. It's just that not a lot of them are featured, but it's a cycle, and it goes up and down. And I think that the right person comes along at the right time in the right spot, and boom, you know. But as far as managing, my knees and my general overall demeanor and my age and my lack of wanting to work a full-time schedule pretty well – That relegates me to the Midnight Express reunion tours, where I have a great time and get to visit the fans, but don't consider it a full-time job.
Gotcha. What OVW wrestler are you the most proud of developing, and what OVW performer do you think that you thought was going to make it and was a sure thing ended up not making it?
Well, I'll tell you, I got two right off the top of my head, and it's kind of like picking your favorite children. I don't want to leave anybody out. We've trained so many guys here, you know. I could name 40 different people, but John Cena, to me, is the total package as far as being a quality human being, a great athlete, a tremendous personality and presence, you know, and just a wonderful guy. And every time he comes back here, it's like he's the most humble person in the world. He remembers his roots. He remembers the fans by their first names that supported him when he was, you know, just starting out. He's a great example of a success story, and I hope he makes $1 billion. And the guy who should be a superstar and isn't, the Blueprint, Matt Morgan. Mm-hmm. You got a 7-foot guy, 320 pounds, still in his 20s. He can drop kick and leapfrog. He's injury free for the most part. No bad habits to speak of, and a tremendous promo and television presence. So what do they do with him up there? They make him a stuttering buffoon. And he's gone in 6 months. And now he's in Japan doing well, making money. But it's a shame that a guy of that magnitude can't find a spot here in this country, which, of course, that's an Iggy to the TNA management that I'll be speaking to regularly, mm-hmm. that, you know, don't be surprised if you see a big 7-foot son of a gun come along. It's going to sweep the place out. But that's, you know, that's just an example of, once again, you got to be in the right place at the right time. But I see no downside to a guy like Matt Morgan, otherwise in the way he's been treated on television in this country in the times that he's been seen.
Would the Heartthrobs fall under that category also?
The Heart, what a tremendous, they were a great tag team. It was wonderful. They had great personalities. It was just a tremendous persona that they had. And I would be the first one to say that their wrestling was, quite frankly, not ready for the major leagues yet, but they were talented and they were getting it, and they were plucked from the garden too soon because they were the instantly over here in OVW, and the fans were going crazy for them. They were my most popular wrestlers, and so the folks up there saw that and turned around and pulled them up too soon against our advice and took away everything that made them special and told them not to do it, and as a result, they failed. It was doomed to failure to begin with, and then they were banished. And that's what's happened with a lot of young talent that didn't get the right chance, didn't get the proper grooming, didn't get the chance to stay in developmental until they learned their craft, and they burnt through. Any jackass can kick a barn down, but it takes a good carpenter to build one. Right. And nobody has patience. So there's a lot of talent out there, and people say there's no talent in wrestling these days. There's a lot of talent out there. It just needs to be cultivated and then used properly. And I think in TNA you see an example of guys being Samoa Joe, used to their best example. I'm not going to say that that Samoa Joe didn't have overtures from the WWE, but he was smart enough to realize that he wouldn't be allowed to be himself, and he wouldn't be allowed to be used to the best of his ability, whereas in TNA he has, and he's become a superstar.
Jim, is it a little strange that you are part owner of a WWE developmental territory working for a competitive group and possibly trying to influence their contract decisions on who they sign?
You know what's even stranger? The only wrestling promotion in America that I'm not welcome on television is the one that I'm part owner of. It's strange, isn't it? Wrestling is a strange business.
It is. Hey, one last question for you. Why don't you fly?
You know what? I never liked it, and I had to when I was on the road full time. But now that I don't need the money or the opportunities, and after September 11th, me and airplanes don't mix. It's, you know, going to an airport these days, it's like going to jail where they let you keep your belt.
Right.
Okay, and you know, I don't need it. I got a nice Lincoln Navigator with a DVD player and a 30-gallon ice chest, and I throw my lovely better half in the car, and we go on trips and take vacations when I make wrestling shows now. Used to, I work 7 nights a week. Now I'm gone 7 nights to make one shot.
I got what you're saying. Hey, Jim, thanks so much for the time. It was great talking to you again.
Thanks, Alex.
All right, be well.
Our next question comes from Jason Klevitt from Slam Wrestling. Your line is open, sir.
Hey, Jim, how you doing?
Jason, how you doing, man?
Not too bad. Calling up from Canada, and I got to say this is one of the more entertaining conference calls I've listened in on, so thank you very much for that.
Well, thank you. And I've been on Slam Wrestling, have I not?
I believe you have, yes.
I sure have. So what's going on in Toronto?
I'm actually in Calgary.
You're in Calgary. That's right. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of something else in Toronto.
No, we're based out of
Toronto. Well, how is things in Calgary, Alberta, Canada?
Pretty good. It's Stampede Week, so we've got a whole bunch of people pretending to be cowboys.
Well, go down to the corral and kick a bull for me.
I will do that for you. People have been taking a lot of my questions. My first question, I guess, would be people like you, Gabe Sapolsky, who's a booker for Ring of Honor, some of the people who are the best minds in the business never really were in an active professional wrestler or had like more of a managerial role. And with managers not existing so much today without having, as you said, big breasts, what sort of advice would you give somebody who wanted to break into the business, not as a wrestler, but as somebody who had a goal of potentially being a booker or having a behind-the-scenes role in influencing a wrestling promotion in that way?
Well, and also the term booker is now outdated. Now it's writer in many cases, which I refuse to use that term, just like I refuse to use the term character. If you don't have a personality, you can't manufacture one. You don't play a character. You are yourself and let the chips fall where they may. Booker arose from matchmaker, which is basically the job in wrestling. You take the personalities that you have in your company, whether it be 30 years ago, Dusty Rhodes and Dick Murdoch, or right now, you know, AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels. You take the personalities you have in your company and you make matches that you believe people will want to see between these outrageous, unique, and colorful personalities that have conflicts. You make the matches, and that's all you really need to do. It's today things are many times overwritten, overanalyzed, overproduced. And the best thing you can do to get good professional wrestling that the fans like is to let guys who have personality show them, who have ability, use it, and then make matches between people that the fans really like, and in some cases the fans really would like to see get their butt kicked, and see what happens. And that's the trick of matchmaking. And I think that Vince Russo, the demon seed of all professional wrestling, was one who hastened the new wave of things where the writers or whoever the whatever they call them, they think they're the stars. I mean, Russo even wanted credit. He couldn't get credit. He couldn't get patted on the back except by the internet audience because he didn't get a credit at the end of the show, so he put himself on camera in WCW and put a billionaire out of business. You can't have good wrestling without two things, great talent and good matchmaking. And the best matchmaking in the world can't overcome bad talent. And the greatest talent in the world cannot overcome crummy matchmaking. But the talent is, to me, is more important. Because if you don't have the product, I don't care how good your salesman is, you can't sell it. So to answer your question now, for people who want to be involved in the matchmaking and creative process, you don't have to be a wrestler, but I believe firmly you do have to be two things. You have to be a big wrestling fan because you got to know what the fans want to see. But you also have to have had some type of performing experience, whether it be as a manager or a referee or an announcer or a wrestler or whatever, because you have to know what it's like on both sides. You have to know what the fans want to see, but you also have to know what it's like to perform that, and you have to know how to give people maybe not what they want to see but what you want them to see to make the most money. So if that makes any sense to you.
It does. And my second question is sort of the old school versus new school mentality. Lance Storm was doing some work in OVW towards the end of your tenure there, and I'm actually looking at his website right now, and he mentioned he's comparing WWE to TNA and basically saying how Raw has 18 minutes of wrestling, and in a one-hour Impact, they had 22 minutes of wrestling, and you cut a promo, which he says is what you do best, is cutting wrestling promos, and he hopes you play more than just an on-air role with the company. And that while you and him are often of different schools of thought when it comes to booking, your stuff always has direction, makes sense, and is easy to follow.
Well, let me say this about Lance, and I'll let you get back to it. Is Lance, and actually, to add to the list I mentioned a minute ago, Lance Storm and Chris Jericho worked their first matches in the United States for me in Smoky Mountain Wrestling. I saw their tapes when they'd just been in the business a couple of years, and I saw the talent, and I think Lance is tremendous. And the only difference that we have is in some cases, I like a little more sizzle, but I like there to be a steak down there somewhere. Lance likes all steak, but he may not like it to sizzle too much. And then you got the WWE where you smell the thing, but it's still somewhere in the kitchen. You never see it. So that's the only difference that Lance and I have. But there's no such thing as old school and new school. There's good wrestling and bad wrestling. And if somebody can talk, let them talk. If somebody can wrestle, let them wrestle. If somebody's not a comedian, don't try to have them tell jokes. So to me, wrestling overall was better in the 80s because it was concentrated more on credible sport and wrestling. But that's not to say there's not great wrestling today. And that's not to say that everything was too slow-paced in 1960. Good wrestling and bad wrestling. It's not old school and new school. I'll take anything that the fans like, that they want to pay to see, and that's entertaining to watch.
Well, I guess my final question is sort of about something specific that's been talked about recently online. Harry Smith is the son of Davey Boy Smith. And
yes.
He's a great talent in his own right. There's talk that they're going to be bringing him into WWE as Brooke Hogan's boyfriend to feud with Randy Orton. You would
think
being Davey Boy Smith's son would be enough.
Well, now you're thinking too logically. You know, there needs to be a twist, because that's another thing. Everybody thinks they have to fool everybody and surprise everybody these days. Davey Boy Smith was one of the biggest stars in the business in the 80s and 90s. And to be his son and to be the size that I understand Harry is, I've not met the young man, But to understand with the size and the natural ability he has, that ought to be enough. I don't believe he's Brooke's boyfriend, because he's not Brooke's boyfriend. I've never met Brooke either. But I know they're not boyfriend and girlfriend, and I don't think anybody else is going to buy it either. It's just another example of something being a square peg being forced into a round hole. You got the British Bulldog son. He's a hell of an athlete. Here he is. Take a look. Decide for yourself, folks. Doesn't need any bells and whistles and parsley.
Jimmy, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much. It's been an honor talking to you.
Thank you, and watch out for the stampede.
I will.
Our next question comes from Adam Martin from WrestleView.com. Your line is open, sir.
How you doing, Mr. Cornette?
Adam, how are you?
Doing great. I wanted to kind of get your take on something that I've always found really interesting in the last few years. I've been covering TNA since they've started, and when a lot of people kind of wrote them off, and I was just excited to see something kind of new on TV because, you know, in 2002, it probably wasn't the best time to be a wrestling fan. And when they came along, I was really excited just to see something kind of new, see some of the newer guys that were coming up. A lot of comments have been made about comparing WWE and TNA. And, you know, obviously you have a lot of experience with this, being in the WWE, even in the Beyond the Mat film where you were even discussing this, even Vince was discussing how they like to make movies there and how they consider themselves more entertainment. A lot of people, and I know there was already one Paul Heyman reference earlier, and I don't mean to shove him down your throat.
No, that's okay. I'd love to shove him somewhere, but go ahead.
Well, the thing that he said, and, you know, this is a common thing with a lot of WWE guys that I speak with, is that they don't consider TNA to be competition because they're entertainment and TNA's wrestling, and a lot of TNA guys agree with that. They say, yeah, because, you know, we aren't entertainment. Do you really think that's the big difference between TNA and WWE, is that TNA is wrestling and just WWE is on a whole other platform, even though that there happens to be a ring there?
Well, see, there's the problem, and there's why I didn't last any longer in Stamford on the creative end of things, is because the WWE has deluded themselves into thinking they're not wrestling. Vince McMahon created the term sports entertainment in 1984 to try to fool the big advertisers into thinking that they weren't buying into some low-rent trailer park entertainment, that they were buying into something that was entirely new and revolutionary. And if you notice, for those of us who are old enough to remember, the crowds and the per capita attendance and the ratings have steadily dropped over the past 20 years since wrestling got big. You know, Memphis, Tennessee in 1974 was drawing 8,000 people 50 times a year to the Mid-South Coliseum. Now they're lucky if they can go to the Mid-South Coliseum or the Pyramid in Memphis twice a year and draw 8,000 people. So what has happened is they've deluded themselves into believing that they're not wrestling and that they are sports entertainment, and the new people that have been hired that have heard this story in the company and don't have a wrestling background to know better buy it and believe it. And therefore, you got a bunch of people running around up there in Stamford that when you say, well, boy, you know, the wrestling business is blah, 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 they say, oh, we're not wrestling, we're sports entertainment. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever heard anybody say, hey, did you see the sports entertainment show on TV last night? Did you get your tickets to the sports entertainment matches down at the Coliseum this Tuesday?
Yeah.
Boy, what a sports entertainment match that was. Boy, that guy's a great sports entertainer. I was sitting in a conference room one time with Vince McMahon and Shane McMahon and Jim Ross and Bruce Prichard and a bunch of other people. And Shane McMahon actually asked this question, and I quote, and I swear on my mother's grave that this is a legitimate exchange that we had. What should we call our talent? I said, what about wrestlers? We're not wrestling. We're sports entertainment. Should we call them entertainers? Should we call them this or whatever he said? I said, look, they wear wrestling boots and wrestling tights. They get in a wrestling ring and they have wrestling matches. What do you want to call them? Ballet dancers? They've deluded themselves. Everybody up there are billionaires or millionaires because of the professional wrestling business, and they won't admit they're in it. Now, I'll work with you. I'll work with you. If you'll just not insult me by acting like I'm an idiot and don't know what's going on, I'll work with you. If you want to call the lamp a table, I'll call the lamp a table as long as we've agreed between you and me that I know that it's a lamp. I'll call it anything you want, but don't tell me it's not a lamp because I'm looking at it. It's got a bulb and a shade.
Yeah. I'm glad, you know, it's someone – I mean, I know you would have a lot to say about that because that's one thing that has been just constantly hammered down the throats of a lot of people. A lot of interviews are coming out, especially with the new ECW, and their TNA is always going to be put on that radar, but it just always seems like they're trying to keep that thing down. And but
I'll tell you what, the damage that the WWE does to TNA is not presenting better wrestling, is not presenting a better program. The damage that the WWE does to not only TNA, but anybody else that tries to promote professional wrestling in this country is, unfortunately, because of their long tenure, because they were there first, because they've got wide coverage, people think that's what professional wrestling looks like these days, and so they choose to turn it off, for the most part, to either turn it off, or you get, they've created a new fan base that think that that's what wrestling is supposed to look like. So basically, the WWE being in existence, in my opinion, keeps other wrestling promoters from drawing crowds because you can't get any credibility anymore. If you say, you know, Jim wants to challenge Joe for the TNA championship or the ROH championship or the FBI championship or whatever it is, then people will say, well, gosh, we looked at WWE and nobody cares about the titles because it's all hogwash and the son-in-law has it and they're just worried about showing naked male midget asses, and so why should the wrestling match be important? That's the damage that the WWE does. It's not because they're better competition in terms of the product. It's that they blow credibility out of the water for anybody else who wants to try to present a good one.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Cornette.
Not a problem.
Our next question comes from Brian Shank with WKRS, 1220 AM.
Hey, Brian. How you doing?
Hey, Jimmy. Pleasure to talk to you. Been a fan for a long time. I'm one of those great guys who go back to the 80s with the NWA TV and you out there with the tennis racket with the greatest tag team ever, the Midnight Express.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it very much.
No problem. Yeah, I learned a lot watching because back in the old days in NWA, you had the smaller audience. You had the little studio that you guys did the wrestling matches at. And, you know, sometimes I heard over 95, 100 degrees in that old studio. And you really gave it your all every time you went out there, whether it was, you know, some scrub versus, you know, Dennis Condrey by himself or whether Arn Anderson had to wrestle somebody. I miss the intensity and the effort by the wrestlers today, and I talk about today meaning WWE.
Well, you know, the thing is that, first of all, about giving your all, the thing is if you enjoy what you do for a living, and also if somebody's paying you good money to do it, I believe you ought to go out and give it everything you got. And also, when you're working with a team like the Midnight Express, I wasn't going to go out and sit on my butt and not do what I was supposed to do because then that would reflect badly on them. And here they are, you know, the best tag team in professional wrestling at that point. And, you know, I'm not going to go out and make them look bad. So, yeah, everybody worked together and worked hard and enjoyed what they did and were given the freedom to be who they wanted to be.
Absolutely. And to be them being, I think, in my opinion, the best tag team ever, that's not a doubt. And I also want to say, you know, you remember back a date I'm going to throw at you, March 27th, 1988.
The first Clash of Champions, Greensboro, Midnight of Fantastics. How's that?
What else? The best part about it is you guys went up head-to-head with WrestleMania IV. That's what just killed me. I loved it.
Well, you know, that was one of the strategies at that time. You know, Vince would piss in Crockett's pool, and then he'd turn around and do the same thing. And you know, the one thing is it was competition, and it was interesting for the wrestling fans, and they had a choice. They had an alternative. They could watch the one show or watch the other show. You didn't have to just eat a steak every day. You could have chicken. You could have a hamburger. You could have a salad. And we had a ball doing what we did, and we had a ball doing that show. It was a tremendous – and more people saw the Clash of Champions live on TBS than saw WrestleMania.
Yeah, without a doubt. That was one of the better shows, and, you know, I got an old tape of that somewhere here, and – you know, when I get a little bit embarrassed to be a fan of the WWE and stuff like that, I either watch TNA or like an old NWA show. And speaking of TNA now, obviously with you coming in and just bringing the wealth of experience that you've had for the last 20-something years, is there anybody there that reminds you of the old days back in the 80s that could really, really accomplish themselves, either as a tag team or an individual? I know Samoa Joe goes without saying, but what about the Naturals now with Shane Douglas?
Well, I tell you, and you know, bear in mind now, I've only just started with TNA, and I was on a self-imposed wrestling exile for quite a bit last year and early this year, so I didn't get to see a lot of the programming. But I did say one thing at the company meeting on Impact a couple of weeks ago that unfortunately for time reasons was edited out because the segment ran very long because there was a lot of stuff going on. But I made the point, and I'll make it again here, that to me, AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels and America's Most Wanted had one of the best tag team matches that I've seen in years. in America at least, on the pay-per-view, and as well, I think they're two of the best tag teams in the business. And Daniels and Styles are more noted for being individuals that have recently teamed up. America's Most Wanted has been together for a while, but you know the death sentence is kind of a revamped version of the old Midnight Express Vegematic, and I mentioned that to Chris Harrison and James Storm when I saw them several months ago, and I said thanks for keeping it alive because they do it great too, and they do a lot of other stuff that actually the Midnight never attempted. But, you know, they're a great tag team, and they stay together. And that's the problem, is now tag team wrestling has been taking a hit because when wrestlers are under contract to a company, even the example of WWE might team up you and me, and we'll be a team for 3 months. Then they'll say, well, now we'll team you up with somebody else, and I'll be standing over in the corner. In the old days, the tag teams went from promotion to promotion together, mm-hmm. and they were together for years at a time, and that's why they were such good teams. You can't just jump in and do this like playing Twister, for God's sake.
Right.
So, you know, with America's Most Wanted and Styles and Daniels, you're getting state-of-the-art tag team wrestling to me in this country today.
You mentioned Matt Morgan being a waste of talent, you know, not being used to his full potential. Do you also think someone like Rob Conway is also another guy who is just being a big laughingstock?
Oh, good heaven. And, I'm glad you mentioned that because I got to say Rob Conway, Doug Basham, Danny Basham, and obviously Eugene Nick Densmore, they were the backbone, the core of Ohio Valley Wrestling here when I first got here and for 3 or 4 years afterwards. Doug Basham is Danny Davis's nephew. He was Danny's first student. And Nick Densmore is like Danny's adopted son, his second student. The Damaja from right up the road in Seymour, Indiana, home of Rip Rogers and John Cougar Mellencamp, is third student, and Conway was his fourth student. Or I think I reversed Conway and Damaja. Anyway, these guys, what talents they are. They can talk. They can wrestle. If I needed 5 minutes, if I needed 30 minutes, if I needed an interview, if I needed the ring truck tire changed. And I pushed and pushed and pushed for months and years. Why aren't you calling these people up? Why aren't you using them? And finally they do, and then one guy becomes a brain-damaged goof like he got hit by a bus on Broadway. Conway, the heels of his boots are worn out from laying down so much, and the Bashams are the invisible men.
Yeah.
But yet they will take these useless divas. I mean, has anybody ever seen any more annoying television than this diva search business?
Oh, God.
They'll take them and they'll pay them $250,000 to take their clothes off on a cover of Playboy magazine. You know what? I love porn. If I wanted to get the porn business, I'd be in the porn business. And I don't have anything against it, but don't mix it in with my wrestling. I like ice cream and ketchup, too, but not together.
I like porn.
You got divas being paid. You got substandard talent being used because they're the relative of someone or somebody's buddy, and here you got these great young talents that are sitting at home during their prime peak athletic years not being allowed to show what they can do, and I think it's disgraceful.
Yeah, I agree with you. One more quick question here. Is Ric Flair embarrassing himself in the WWE right now, or is he just doing what he has to do to collect the paycheck?
No, you know, I can't say either. Ric Flair, I love Ric Flair. He was not only a very important influence in my career, but also when you talk about the total package, when you talk about athletic ability, dedication, night-in and night-out performance, wrestling ability, personality, everything, Rick is the man for the last 25 years. But the thing is, Rick is now not what he once was because he's nearing 60, so he's just better than like 60% of the guys in the business instead of 100. But if Ric Flair could not go out in a ring, in an arena, at least a few times a week and do what he does and has done so well for so long, he would be a miserable person. I say if Ric Flair can wrestle when he's 75, I know how much he loves it. I think he doesn't have to do it for free, but he probably would. And I say let him do it because, you know, with what he's meant, and you see the ovation he gets, you see the numbers he gets. Ric Flair is a Teflon man in terms of the fans' eyes. They respect him, and the respect, I think, means that they overlook the age factor. They overlook the fact that he's past his physical peak, because at least it's like being able to go to a baseball game now and still see Mickey Mantle play.
Right.
I mean, I don't care if he hits the home run. I saw him in person.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you what, Jimmy, it was a pleasure to talk to you. And again, those days of the NWA back in the day, I hope they can kind of, you know, come back alive again here in TNA. And so far, it's a good start. It's good to see you on TV again, and it's good to see you alive, healthy, and well. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man, very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Doc Young with the Wrestling Weekly.
Mr. Jimmy Cornette, how
Doc,
are you?
Doc, how are you? Hey, last time I talked to you, you gave me that prescription. I tried to go to the Walgreens to get it filled. They arrested me.
Well, never mind. I'm not going to be talking about that.
Maybe we'll do that in private.
Les Thatcher wanted to be here today.
Where is old man Thatcher, my Uncle Les?
He's at the gym.
Well, good for him, because that way I don't have to do it.
Yeah, he says, Doc, take care of my light work.
I owe him a phone call, by the way, and tell him I haven't been putting him off, but I've been struggling with my knee rehab and various things, and I got to call him.
Yeah, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about was a couple of years ago, you had a throat problem. I was wondering about that.
Well, long story short, I'm not going to go into my entire medical history here because it's boring, but I was doing the announcing on the OVW television show every week at the top of my lungs and giving it everything I had, plus I was doing the meetings and the training sessions and laying things out and going to the spot shows. I had acid reflux bad. I have allergies. I went to the doctor. I had them stick a camera down my throat, all kinds of stuff. I guess it's better than the other end. And basically they said, don't do any of the things that I do. Don't yell. Don't have stress. Don't eat spicy food. Take this high-priced prescription for acid reflux. Do all these things, and nothing worked, and plus 25 years of being in the wrestling business and trying to scream to the back row. But now that I do not do that on a weekly basis, and I have modified my diet somewhat as I get older, and also just not screaming and yelling, it's tons better. And now when it rains or the weather changes, I get allergies, and if I do a promo with all my heart like I do sometimes in Ring of Honor, or you saw on TNA Impact, I'll be hoarse the next day, but thankfully most of that has gone away.
That's good news.
The rumors of my demise have been greatly exaggerated.
Yes. One more question. You of course, ran Smoky Mountain Wrestling in the mid-90s, one of the greatest indies, in my opinion. Are you looking forward to maybe someday starting from scratch one more time and trying to bring up a new promotion?
You know, I'd love to say yes, but the fact is it's a young man's game. When you have to devote that much time and effort and you have to have a single-minded purpose and just immerse your life in it, I don't have the energy. I couldn't do it again. In today's climate, you need huge production values. I mean, when I saw the TNA layout, I just went crazy because they've got the pyro and the lights and the Impact Zone live, especially of the pay-per-view atmosphere. It was just insane, the people jumping up and down, screaming, throwing babies in the air. It's infectious, but I just don't have the heart and the guts and the energy and the youth to take something like that on again whole single-handedly. And especially in today's climate, you know, I think it's best that I try to lend my expertise to a group rather than trying to go off on my own. And so that's the long answer to your short question.
Absolutely. I hear you. All right, Jimmy.
I'm going to be kind of like, you know, Sid Barrett, the founding member of Pink Floyd, died today. He went crazy in the late 60s, and he's been a recluse for 30 years, living on his royalties in England, tending a garden. He died today, and I want to go out like Sid Barrett. I want to be popped up on television. Jim Cornette passed away today, and people say, where's he been for the last 20 years? And the answer is, he's been home. He's been in the garden. That's where I want to be.
Absolutely. No, I think wrestling needs more great minds like Jim Cornette on a personal note.
Well, thank you very much.
So please, stick around.
I'm not going anywhere yet. I plan to live to be 90.
Awesome.
Actually, if I knew for sure I was going to live to be that old, I'd take better care of myself.
Absolutely. Jim, I want to thank you for your time, and give Les a call. We'll talk again.
Absolutely.
Bye.
Our next question comes from Mitchell Jones of VOW UK.
Hi, Mr. Cornette. Thank you for taking the time out to talk to us today.
Mitchell, all the way from the UK.
Yeah. It's always a pleasure to listen to Jim Cornette. I listened to you the other day, your shoot that you did with Bobby Heenan. Very entertaining. So thank you for talking to us.
Well, thank you.
And my first question is, before you mentioned about the aeroplanes and stuff and how you won't fly, but there's a promotion in the UK called 1PW who have a working relationship with TNA, and Ring of Honor, who you also work for, are coming over here in August for a weekend. Is there any desire at all for you to come over to the UK for a show or for anything to address the number of fans that you do have here in the UK?
Well, now, see, Mitchell, now you're going to make me a big bad guy with everybody in England and the UK if I say, no, I don't want to come over there. My girlfriend just went over there this past year, and she loved it, had a great time sightseeing with some friends, and she's been bugging me to come over there, and Ring of Honor folks have asked me, and TNA has not at this point asked me as of yet because we're just getting into the relationship. So I'm not ruling out that I'm not ever going to be there, but the rest of the year at least I'm kind of booked and kind of busy and got things going on over here, but I'd love someday to see England and see Europe, and I'm thinking a combination business and pleasure, a nice cruise over there and a nice cruise back. It would be lovely, and it would fit everybody's needs.
Sounds good. I do apologize for the nervousness, by the way. It just probably doesn't come through for everyone, but it's weird because as much as I might be an internet host or whatever, I'm still a wrestling fan, so it's always a pleasure to be able to listen and learn from guys like yourself. Second question, and I'm only going to ask two more, I'm not going to take up too much of your time. What are your thoughts on Jeff Jarrett? I mean, there's a lot of criticisms of his spot in TNA as far as being in the title picture a lot. What are your thoughts on him on the top, and do you think it's a positive or a negative for TNA as far as the amount of times that he is at the top?
Well, you know, Jeff really disappointed me, and I'll say this, it's not a secret, but a lot of people probably don't know it just because it's back in the sands of time. His grandmother, Christine Jarrett, was the local promoter here in Louisville for years, and because of her, this little teenage punk that used to run around the wrestling matches was able to not only get a job as an announcer and a photographer and selling programs, but finally get into wrestling, and that's me. And I've known Jeff since he was 14 years old, and everything that I said on Impact, on TNA Impact a couple of weeks ago at the company meeting was true, and I know that's a shock to a lot of people. Wait, they spoke the truth on a wrestling show? But that's kind of what separates me from other people, is I will say what I think. And Jeff has all the talent in the world as an athlete and as a wrestler, and it's in his genes. His father, Jerry Jarrett, also was instrumental in my career and was a great promoter for 30 years. But Jeff is using, to me, his position and his stature and his reputation to try to hornswoggle and try to keep control of that NWA World Championship and try to shove himself down the fans' throats. And that's why I came out and said that he and I are going to bump heads, because I feel like somebody else ought to have a shot. He keeps finding one way or another to I guess they don't use the word hornswoggle over there in the UK. He keeps finding one way or another to cheat his way into getting back in the top spot. And I think it's going to be interesting, because I've power played with a few people before, and I win some and I lose some, but they're going to find out my head's harder than they think it is. Me and Jeff are going to butt heads, and it's a shame because of the relationship I've had with his family, but I think it's time that somebody else gets the opportunity, and a fair one, and Jeff don't want to get out of the way, and sometimes you got to push.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I have to agree. Final question, pretty lighthearted one. For anyone who wants to get into the wrestling business as a manager, what brand of tennis racket do you recommend?
The hardest one you can find.
Thank you. Okay, Jim, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Good luck with your future.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Once again, as a reminder, if you do have a question, press star 1. Our next question comes from James Walsh from Blaze. Go ahead.
It's actually the Blaze 1260 AM in Tempe, Arizona. James E. Cornett, it's good to talk to you. I'm another James E., James E. Walsh. Good to
well, there you go. And Tempe, Arizona, which is very close to Phoenix, as I remember my geography.
Yes, it is. Right.
I love Scottsdale. That mall up there, I used to stay at the Embassy Suites in Scottsdale. A very good friend of mine, Kit Parker, with Kit Parker Films, lives up in Cave Creek. And I think you got a beautiful part of the country, but it's hot in the summertime.
Oh, yes, it is. It's about 110 today, and I'm staying in the air conditioning.
Well, there you're a smart man. You ought to get an iron lung to live out there in August.
Something you mentioned earlier in the conversation, unfortunately I joined about 20 minutes late. Shame on you.
Well, shame on you, yeah.
Exactly. See, I beat you to the punch. You mentioned something about adult content in wrestling, and it's funny that ECW, being the company that's known to have adult content, is actually on at an earlier time slot than the family-friendly company that is doing.
Well, now let's first of all, folks, I am way as far away from a prude as you can possibly get, and I've tried to hold my language down for this conference call because the TNA management, their ears would probably be fried if I talked the way I normally do, and it's hard to hurt my feelings. You can come in my dining room and take a dump on my table, and it won't bother me. However, I know that other people don't have the same sensibility. And when you say adult content, that's another word for sex and violence and language.
Right.
And to me, that's not adult. Because to me, it's childish. It's childish on a professional wrestling program. It's childish on any type of sports program to have questionable content and like nudity or semi-nudity or transvestite oral sex or penis enlargers or roosters being delivered or whatever. That's not adult. That's childish. Please, it's silly. Silly is a word I used to use in Stanford, and people used to go ballistic when I would use the word silly, but it's silly. Adult is Frasier, for heaven's sake. You got to be an adult to really get a kick out of Frasier because you don't know all the words until you're about 22. That's adult. Bad comedy and questionable material to me is childish, and what it does is it runs off a portion of your audience. But I don't think it brings anybody else to the program. If I want to see porn, I can rent a porn tape. If I want to watch comedy, I can watch a comedy on television. If I want to see naked women, I've got 400 cable channels. I want to see wrestling. I want to see people talk about wrestling and people wrestle, and then people talk about the results of what happened when they wrestled. The personalities are colorful enough and entertaining enough without having to throw all that stuff in. Yes, there has to be bells and whistles. I've had cakes in my face on national television.
Right.
I was stripped to my boxer shorts and fed a baby bottle in the Superdome. I was tarred and feathered in the Omni. There's got to be a little gaga, but it has to be based around wrestling and not offending your fans. I'm not religious, but I don't want to offend people's religions.
Right.
I'm not gay, but I don't want to make fun of people that are gay if I want them to watch my television program.
Right.
Why am I trying to piss these people off?
Right.
I just want to present a program that people can enjoy watching if they choose to do so without being insulted.
Is that kind of why you ended up with TNA, because they are wrestling and not sports entertainment?
Well, yes, and also because I've watched a number of their programs, especially as the talks between us got serious. And I can't say that I saw anything that insulted my intelligence as far as just silliness, making a mockery of the business or whatever. Everybody's going out and trying to do the best job that they can to produce a quality product. And so, you know, when I was still with OVW and we had the relationship with the WWE and people would stop me here at Kroger in Louisville or whatever, I would have to downplay our relationship with the WWE because they would be coming up to me saying, well, how can you be involved in that? What they did the other night or what they did with the midget or what they did with the dwarf or what they did with the hooker, it was embarrassing because these are people in my hometown that know me and have seen me around for 25 years, and I didn't want to have to explain to them why that I'm affiliated with that type of programming.
I absolutely agree. I'm known as the wrestling guy amongst town, and when they come up to me like, how could you watch what they do with the feces and things like that? It's just,
yeah, you know, and I've got to say another thing here, and once again, I got a platform here, and Ross Foreman is probably sitting back somewhere dying going, geez, we're way over time. But this worm-eating business. Now, you know, I like the boogeyman. He's a hell of a guy. He's strange, and I'll tell you something. I wouldn't be the one to want to fire him whenever he gets fired because, believe me, boogeyman's a good name for him, and what you see is what you get. And if he wants to eat worms, that's fine. But I don't want to watch somebody eat worms on TV. It's the same reason I don't watch Fear Factor. I don't like bugs. I don't want to see people eating them. But when you go so far as to start dumping worms in other people's mouths or in women's mouths or kissing them with, there's got to be a line drawn. And, you know, the day that I need a job badly enough that I can show up for work and somebody says, we're going to have this guy dump 150 live worms in your mouth, and I don't say, no, that won't be happening tonight or any other time, I hope to God it never comes to where I need a job that bad.
I got three more questions for you. I hope you have time to answer them.
Absolutely.
Okay. This is not a TNA question. I do apologize, but it has to do with an announcer who wasn't a fan of yours from the dying days of WCW, Mark Madden. He made a comment once that you fell off the scaffold in 1988 and ended your career, and you haven't realized it yet. Do you have any response to that?
Yeah, well, you know, somebody just told me that Mark Madden had a heart attack recently. I find that hard to believe because I don't think he has a heart. Mark Madden was a guy that I thought was a friend of mine that I used to speak to on the phone about once a month with, and he even came down to Smoky Mountain Wrestling and spent a weekend with us going to the matches, and I drove him to the matches in my own car, and we were fine. But then he got the job, which he'd always wanted to be in wrestling, and he got a job doing the hotline for WCW, and to try to kiss Eric Bischoff's butt, he started, when I wasn't even affiliated with the company, didn't have anything to do with the company, he started basically lying about me, and if you tell the truth, that's fine, but he lied about me. He said that I'd stiffed people on payoffs. He said that I'd done this and that and the other. He lied, basically. I'm not going to go in the whole thing, but he lied. And I called him up, and he wouldn't talk to me. Put his mother on the phone. His poor mother had to hear my wrath because the guy was too cowardly to talk to me. And we're going to have a fight one of these days. If I ever see him, I'm just going to tell you that right now. If this is a threat and I can be arrested for it, fine. One of these days, we're going to have a fight if I'm in the same place. And I'll tell you this, I've been in the same place with him one time since then, and it was at a fundraiser for Mark Curtis, my good friend Brian Hildebrand, who passed away shortly after of cancer. There was a fundraiser in his hometown that I agreed to go to. A lot of guys were there. Mick Foley was there. Mark Curtis had tons of friends. And Mark Madden came to do publicity. And I heard the night before that he was going to be there, so I called the promoter. And I said, look, I don't know if I can control myself. I don't want to get in a big stink with this guy, so I'm going to bow out so I don't ruin your show. And the promoter said, don't do that, don't do that. I'll talk to him. And, you know, he's doing radio publicity for us, but I'll make sure that y'all never see each other. And when Madden found out that I'd even offered to pull out, he called the promoter and said, look, if he touches me, if Cornette touches me, then I will sue you and I will attach the gate and my lawyers will take it. So he's going to take the money from a guy that has cancer that's going to pay for his medical bills because he's not man enough to take the ass whipping that he's got coming for lying about a guy on a public forum like a 900 number and knew it was lies and didn't even bother to check it out and made it up to suck up to Eric Bischoff. Mark Madden can kiss my big fat white ass.
Wow, that's a good quote.
And there you have it.
All right, two more left for you. When you get backstage in TNA, you see all these great young talents. Earlier on, you put over America's Most Wanted and Styles and Daniels as great tag teams. But when you see these young talents, somebody asked you about OVW, what do you see in TNA? Who do you think is really going to capture that audience?
Well, you know, there's so many guys that are getting their first national television exposure, you know, with TNA, the guys that I mentioned, and a lot of the X Division guys. And, you know, and some people say, well, the X Division is for the cruiserweights, but then Samoa Joe was the champion. To me, the X Division, in theory, was for the guys that want to get a little bit more extreme, regardless of what their size is. But I think any of the guys, you know, you can talk about the Naturals earlier. You know, great-looking young athletes. Anybody right now that's on TNA television that's getting their first national exposure, to me, has a chance to be a breakout star, so you can just pick it. Because they all have the determination, they have the drive, they have ability, and the ones that are featured and catch on with the audience are going to be pushed to the moon because that's the idea. You want people that the fans want to see. So I think any of these guys could be the next breakout star because they all want it.
You don't think any shine brighter than others like Joe or a guy that I'm really high on, Eric Young?
Oh, well, you know, Team Canada and, of course, you know, Damore Butterball, you know, he's a heat-seeking missile. I'm going to probably have some issues with him as well, as I already have, but to me, he grouped Team Canada together to have people to back him up, and it's hurting their individual careers. I don't like to see four guys in a group. Tag team's fine, but I like to see guys going out and thinking about their own individual interests. So Eric Young is a good talent. I think Bobby Roode's a tremendous talent. You know, Petey Williams, size works against him in terms of standing up physically against some of the bigger guys, but he can run circles around them. And that Canadian Destroyer, my God, I'm just glad that I'm retired from physical competition. You know, so, I mean, it's any of these guys. They've waited for their opportunity, and now it's here, and they're trying to grab it, as the old saying goes, grab the bull by the tail and face the situation.
Final question for you, it involves this Sunday. As a man of style, with your famed suits and the tennis racket that usually matched, how do you think Larry Zbysko will look bald?
I'll tell you something. You know, Raven it wouldn't hurt him to go ahead and shave his head anyway, just for the sake of it. I mean, poor Raven has had some bad hair days here of late, but Mr. Zabisco seems to be so concerned about his comb-over and his lack of plumage up there. And, you know, that's another thing. I was disappointed in Larry, who I've known for 20 years, who is allowing himself to get trapped into the Jeff Jarrett business. And what kind of authority figure is he when he's hemming and hawing and he's basically got his hand? You know how I met Larry Zabisco? I reached in my back pocket to grab my wallet and shook hands with him. That's how I met Larry Zabisco. He's always got his hand in somebody else's pocket. So we're going to find out. He doesn't have to go through with this, like I said on television. He can go ahead and breach his contract and be on his way, and we can part friends, or he can be involved in this, and I will do everything I can to make him a miserable human being for as long as it takes, because I want TNA to succeed, and I don't think anybody has any faith in the impotent authority figures that they've had until now. So I'm going to do something about that.
Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing you this Sunday at the pay-per-view, and thank you so much for taking the time out to give me a couple minutes.
Thanks, man.
I appreciate it.
Next question comes from Black Jack Brown from Chicago Sun-Times. Mr. Brown, you have the floor.
I figured I'd...
Oh, now, Black Jack, you're double-dipping now.
I got to throw this out there since we were talking about feuds, and some fans may be aware of this, and this may be something that you might want to touch on. There's been three major feuds that you've been slightly involved with. One of them is Paul Lee. Another one is Vince Russo. And what did you think about the Vince McMahon and Bischoff getting together on the same program?
Well, I was fortunate enough not to have to witness the majority of that programming, but... You know, see, that's the thing. I've found, at least it appears to me from my involvement in this whole situation, that if you are loyal and faithful to the WWE and to Vince McMahon, such as Jim Ross was when they publicly humiliated him, kicked him in the nuts, left him laying in the ring, unceremoniously dumped him off of broadcasting Raw when he's the best announcer in the business, and then made fun of his serious surgery after he'd been a valuable employee for 10 years, if you're loyal and faithful, they will do everything they can to kick you in the teeth. But if you screw them or try to put them out of business or sue them, i.e. Sable, i.e. Warrior, i.e. everybody,
right,
then they will bring you back and give you more money, because Vince somehow is getting a jolly, I guess, off of finally being able to hire these people and have them work for him after they were against him for so long. I don't know. I don't see what Eric Bischoff's place in wrestling has ever been, except to open up a billionaire's checkbook, hotshot a territory for 3 years, make a lot of money, and then run it farther into the ground than it ever was. He's not a good performer, in my opinion. He's an obnoxious human being on television, well, because that's his natural flavor in real life. But how he got in the wrestling business was he was a third-string announcer for Vern Gagne that went and got the coffee, and he baffled the people in WCW by padding his resume into thinking that he served the second course at the Last Supper. And that's basically the way he got to be a name in wrestling. Bischoff, to me, is a non-entity. I've never seen anything that he did that I cared about, and I don't think I'm going to start now.
And what do you think about Russo?
Please, don't even get me started. Foreman will kill me. We'll probably have to rent extra phone time. Russo's a complete moron who was in the right place at the right time and who was embarrassed to be involved in wrestling unless he could reinvent it to his own perverted worldview. And he helped in large part to bankrupt a company funded by a billionaire. And in the process, he ran off a lot of good young talent. I just talked to one of them today. I won't mention anybody's name. Don't want to embarrass the guy. But the guy actually quit wrestling after he'd been a WWE tag team champion and a good performer. He quit wrestling because of what Vince Russo stuck him doing on television. Russo ran off tons of young talent. He ran off tons of viewers. And he still, to this day, hasn't figured out, after everybody, universally, old and new, from Jerry Jarrett on down, has not figured out that he's an idiot and the rest of the world is not crazy. He still thinks he saved wrestling. He's a moron. Somebody said, Russo said his CD business in Atlanta going out of business was God's way of telling him to get back in wrestling. And my response to that was, if there was a God, Vince Russo wouldn't be in wrestling.
Probably true. And what about Paulie?
Oh, God, the devil's son. You know what? He's got a great mind. He's a great manager. He's a great performer. I think he did good in booking as far as getting the most out of the least. But the problem that I've always had with Paul Heyman is that he lies to people. And he cost some friends of mine a lot of money. He double-crossed some friends of mine and then lied about it afterwards. And I don't like to do business with somebody that I can't trust. And that prevents me from doing business with most people, unfortunately, the way the world is today. But, you know, I said about Paul Eade, rather climb a tree and tell a lie than stand on the ground and tell the truth. And that's the case. He's got tons of talent, but he's crooked as a country road.
Okay, no more three dipping here. This will be the second one. This is it. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, Blackjack.
All right, brother.
Jim, I think we're going to wrap it up there. I appreciate it.
Already?
Well, I figured I had to let Blackjack go twice. He's, you know, my hometown Chicago guy. I had to let him get an extra one in there.
Yeah, then once we start going around twice, probably everybody else is snoring if we could hear him. We ought to get a big speaker situation where we could hear everybody at one time, just have a big town hall meeting. What do you think?
I like it.
I used to do that with the Gab line.
There you go.
I have one more question for you, Mr. Cornette, from the Kingsport Town News by Kevin Castle. Would you like to go ahead and take
it? From Kingsport, Tennessee, absolutely.
All right, just one moment. Let me get him online. Mr. Kevin Castle, you have the line, sir.
Thank you, sir. Welcome back to Smoky Mountain Wrestling.
Kevin, how are you? How's the folks in Kingsport?
We are doing wonderful, sir, and we miss you down here. We hope you'd come back soon.
Well, I tell you, you know, I've had a great time in East Tennessee. I used to live in Morristown while Smoky Mountain Wrestling was operating, and, of course, we were in Johnson City every month at Freedom Hall, and I've been to Kingsport many times, and it's a great area of the country.
On a personal note, I hope you can give me some pointers because this Sunday night I'm going to be refereeing a match for Iron Ring Wrestling, and your tag team
My
is
good friend
be,
Jeff Tankersley.
Your tag team is going to be across from me.
Uh-oh.
We got the Midnight Express and the Goldens.
Now, wait a minute. Now, how have you found yourself in the unenviable position of facing across the ring from Bobby Eaton and Dennis Condrey?
Bobby, I've come to know Bobby over the past year, and he's I consider him a friend of mine, and I just told him and I told Jeff that it would just be an honor to get in front and ref one of their matches just once, and Bobby said, "Well, let's do it." So let me ask you this. I know that WWE has control of that Smoky Mountain Wrestling video library, and
well, they made great use of it, haven't they?
It'd
be easier to find Amelia Earhart.
We never say never in this business, but if Vince or whoever's head of the video department calls you up and goes, "Look, we're putting together a best of, we want you to do some commentary on it," would you be open to that?
The chances of that happening are so astronomical as to be almost minute that I, of course, I'll say yes because it'll never happen and I'll look like the good guy. They're only concerned with picking out a few matches here and there of people that they want to feature. They own the NWA and WCW libraries and the World Class Library and all those libraries, and the people that work in the television studio up there, and I have nothing bad to say about any of them except Kevin Dunn, who's a moron, but they're very dedicated and they're very talented, but they have been indoctrinated to believe that the WWF and WWWF wrestling in the old days was the best and the other stuff was just where guys got their start. So as a result, when you look at WWE 24/7 on cable, they own all the Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat matches. They own Mid-Atlantic Wrestling. They own all these great wrestling matches from World Class with the Von Erichs. They own all that stuff, and you see Tito Santana Month and those battling midgets. So, you know, that's where they're at, and it's not going to happen. So let's not hold out any hope and falsely confuse ourselves.
Well, I would hope if that can happen, I would hope that you could help me get a hold of some Smoky Mountain videotape or DVD, because I'm desperately searching for it. Believe me, I've been on eBay and I can't find it anywhere.
I tell you what, you get a hold of Ross Foreman on a down low and maybe we can work something out.
I got you. My final question for you, Jim.
Oh, by the way, I heard the WWE 24/7 has as many subscribers in the United States of America as watches Ohio Valley Wrestling Television here in Louisville every Saturday night. So they're doing wonderful. Kudos to him.
Tom Pritchard says to tell you hello, by the way.
Dr. Tom, I love my man, Dr. Tom.
We did an interview with Brian Danielson a couple of months back, and Brian wants to further his studies in the academic world, but I've told the guy who interviewed him, what will it take to bring him to TNA? Is there any strings you could pull? Because this guy is just a stand-up guy, and he's very talented in the ring, and they need him in TNA.
Well, you know, he's a great guy. Of course, obviously, he's the Ring of Honor champion right now, and I do a lot of work with Ring of Honor, so I'm familiar with him. And you know, this is for everybody who may still be listening, still hanging on to the bitter end. TNA is going to showcase a lot of talent in the coming months, but remember, it's 1 hour of television a week and 3 hours of pay-per-view once a month, and the last thing that they want to do or that would be appropriate to do is bring in 60 or 80 wrestlers so half of them become the invisible men that the Bashams have become in the WWE, where you've got talent that's sitting around doing nothing. Doesn't make business sense for the payroll, doesn't make performing sense for the program, and doesn't make sense for the wrestlers who, you know, might be making money but don't get a chance to show what they can do. So I think what it's going to be is I am more than ready to suggest some people. And as contracts come up for renewal, obviously decisions will be made. New people will be hired. Some people will be, you know, asked to go to Japan or something else for a while and come back. But you can't – that's to me, that's what the WWE does, is stockpile wrestlers just so other people can't have them. It's the same thing that WCW was doing when they had an unlimited checkbook in the 90s, and so many great wrestlers were being hidden just so they couldn't have the opportunity to be a boon to someone else's business. And that's not good for anybody. So I think unless the wrestler doesn't want to work and just wants to get a check for sitting home, which is something to be said for that. But the answer to the question is give TNA time, and I think they're going to be showcasing a lot of different talent and a lot of new talent that the folks haven't seen nationally. But they don't want to do it all in one clump, or then nobody gets over and people, instead of being a benefit, it's a detriment.
One last thing, Jim, back on Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Could you tell us a little bit about the connection that Rick Rubin had to that promotion? Of course, he was better known as a record producer for Run DMC and the Beastie Boys. How did he get involved?
Well, now don't just limit him there. He's done all the Johnny Cash albums, including the posthumous one that was just released. He's done Mick Jagger. He's done the Chili Peppers, had tremendous success. Rick Rubin was a big wrestling fan who I was introduced to in 1990. By a friend of mine who was a DJ and later went to work for his record company, Deaf American. And Ruben's favorite wrestling personalities were me and Ric Flair. And he wanted to see more old-style wrestling as well. He thought it had become too commercialized, homogenized, pasteurized. And so that when I left WCW, we discussed it, and he was a major financial backer and a major inspiration in Smoky Mountain Wrestling because he wanted to see more gritty, realistic, credible, old-style wrestling, and that's what we tried to present, and I think did so fairly well over the 4 years that we ran. And finally, the way that it came at the end of 95 to a conclusion was we thought when we started it in 1992 that wrestling had hit as low a recession as it could and that people were waiting for a new product. What we didn't realize was there were still worse times to come because of the steroid trials and the oversaturation on television and the fights between the billionaire and the soon-to-be billionaire.
Mm-hmm.
And if Smoky Mountain Wrestling was operating today with the new advances in television that makes digital recording easier and not so much expense for producing television on a regional basis, and a lot of other ifs and what-ifs, you know, it might have done better, but we hit a time where in the mid-90s, I mean, Vince McMahon was losing $6 million in 1995, and WCW was losing even more, and we just hit a bad – it was a great product, bad time.
Hey, Jim, thank you so much. Everybody else, I want to thank you all as we head into Victory Road. This Sunday on pay-per-view, if I could just ask Chad, Wade, Mitchell, James, and
James
still on the line.
And James!
You stick around, and we'll hook you up with those taglines.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Jim.